Hello, welcome to a bonus episode of the Anything But Quiet Time podcast with some special guests.
My mom and my dad.
Which is where I'm going to see where you get it all, although they did just tell me anything that she does, we don't know where she got it.
They don't accept any of the blame for the bad stuff.
For the crazy stuff.
Which is 99%. But my mom and dad, Tim and Nancy Resider, here today, and I'm going to give like a brief intro, and they're going to probably grade me later as to how well I did. Because this has been their 52 years of marriage, and I only got in on it, you know, years in.
How many was that?
And anyway.
Yeah.
And so, and this is really fun because they kind of think of you as like an adopted son anyway, because I talk about you all the time along with my brother. No, don't take it as a compliment. Oh. They also think that you're part of the 99% that I still struggle
there
with.
There is some influence. So, I do apologize. Yeah.
So my mom and dad are here for a very specific reason today, and I'm really praying and hoping that it's going to bring hope to your world. If you have ever dealt with yourself, any form of mental illness, depression, anxiety, perhaps something a little bit more like a bipolar disorder, which is specifically what we're going to get into today. If you've ever had a relationship with a person who has had these kinds of dealings, how to maneuver as best as you can, how to navigate that, because they have spent so many years, in fact, now specifically dedicated towards this ministry that they have, this nonprofit ministry called Bright Tomorrows, in helping people from a biblical perspective stay as best on track as they can as a family member loving someone well in the midst of mental illness and as a person who may be struggling with that. And so Dad had, I guess, his first biggest episode would have been in 1979, and it was one of those that my mom had to admit him into a psychiatric ward. I know that I've shared this before on the air, which even in just trying to comprehend what that would have been like is on either side of that fence, knowing my parents is I can't comprehend it. Even when it was later in the 80s, when I was very aware that my dad had to once again be admitted into a psych ward, I struggled with what's going on. Just a real brief memory that I have connected to dad, who would later in the late 80s be diagnosed with what was called manic depression, is now referred to as bipolar disorder. I remember before dad was hospitalized, he was constantly going. And it just, dad had a lot of energy. You know, he was the children's pastor. He and my mom had been pastors. And, you know, the end of their pastorship was about 20 years-ish at the church that I grew up in. The church was also connected to the school that I went to. So I spent my life in the church. And he was doing a chapel service one morning. And all the teachers are there and the students are there. That's your dad. And everybody called dad Coach Tim. My mom is Coach Nancy. And he goes up on stage. And from beginning to end, and these chapel services ran anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, from beginning to end, rhymes the entire message. Rhymes without fault the entire message. How does anybody outside of Dr. Seuss do that?
And Dr. Seuss made up words.
Yeah.
He doesn't even count.
The Wahtsahatchewa Lorax. So that was... That was impressive because people kept coming up to me and saying, oh my gosh, your dad is so amazing. Your dad is so great. But at home, my mom's vibe, there was something going on there. She was very good at covering it up for us kids, raising my brother and myself. The very first time dad had a major episode, it actually, he got on a plane and he flew to Washington, D.C., didn't let anybody know. It was a psychiatric break, is the way I would describe it. Dad might correct me later on that, but he left, and by the grace of God, it was a phone call that brought him back home. He went there to go talk to the president of the United States, who he has no connection with whatsoever, President Carter at the time. Thank God he didn't even make it that far, because maybe dad wouldn't be here today. I don't know. But I think there's so much here to glean, because I believe the statistics are not in their favor for the marriage longevity that they've had. There's just no way. And so many people, you may be in the midst of struggle right now where you're dealing with somebody who is really, they're just not themselves. They don't even want to get the help that's needed. And I'm wanting that this moment with us today might be the encouragement, might be the hope, might be the knot in the end of your rope that somebody ties to help you to hang on with all your might so that you can hear a little bit of the perspective of what somebody who is dealing with an illness like a bipolar disorder deals with. There's more sympathy there now. I know what you're kind of experiencing. It kind of gives me a better sense, and somebody who's able to actually use words to define. Otherwise, if they're trying to and they're in the midst of mania or even depression, you might not get one word out of them edgewise, but they might not be able to verbalize what it is that they need to say. And then from the perspective of the loved one who's coming alongside and trying to help and bewildered, I think my mom can speak into that. If you're in ministry and you work with people that are dealing with this and you're wanting to best serve, how can we best serve? This podcast is going to be a breath of fresh air for you. I just know it is. Because God's orchestrated all of this for us today. So, Dad, without further ado, I think my first question was, if you could kind of give us some insight as to what it was like, and please feel free to jump in here.
Sure.
But insight into your worst moments or maybe your most euphoric moments so that maybe somebody listening right now is like their family member's dealing, or maybe somebody who's dealing themselves just need to hear somebody else say, I know what it feels like. Can you give us some insider?
Yeah, thank you first, Carter and Rochelle, for inviting Mom and me here today. It's important to understand bipolar disorder is a mood disorder. Major depressive disorder is a mood disorder. Those are the two biggie mood disorders. So whatever's going on affects the mood. It's a whole biochemical thing tied to a brain dysfunctional thing. Too much science to go into. But the mood goes erratic. Mm-hmm. Now, we all have up times because we're experiencing something that's up, down times because we're experiencing something that's down. That's normal. I experience that. But the mood-disordered person can go euphoric off the charts. There's no basis in what's going on in his life. He's not experiencing, on the depressed side, a loss of a loved one, but he's still depressed off the charts, despairing of life. Now, it's possible for this thing to shoot so far out, spectrum-wise, that you can break into psychosis. That's what you're referring to as a psychotic break. Mm-hmm. Now, what was my worst experience? On the front end, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm euphoric.
Yeah,
I am. My brain is going nonstop. It is creative beyond anything I anticipated. As a follower of Christ, listening to the voice of God was my everything. So now I'm hearing God's voice on everything. He can speak to me through license plate numbers. It didn't matter.
And just to clarify, are you saying that you were actually hearing God's voice, or are you hearing what you deemed?
In and through and by. And when you break psychotic, in mania, you can get into grandiose ways of thinking about things. And the mind is going supercharged, and you have energy, you're sleeping less and less, and the body can only take so much of that.
Yeah.
And it finally will break psychotic. Now, psychotic, the difference there is you go truly delusional in your thinking and probably into hallucinations. Grandiosity means I may think, man, I really am a great football player, and I should be signed this year.
Yeah, sure.
But psychosis means you suddenly become Joe Namath, which probably shows how old I am. Carter may have to bring people up to date with our current name.
He's a classic.
So for me, I was a great prophet of God that the world should be ready for. When I broke psychosis, I was Jesus Christ returned. Hmm. It's a whole different buzz. Hallucinations, you can feel stuff, see stuff, hear stuff. That just ain't there. But it's your reality in the moment.
Sure.
So it's your reality.
How did you, with your knowledge of the Bible, How did those coexist when obviously that's not scriptural? So, and you know, maybe somebody that's going through that's not a Christian doesn't even think about that. But you know the Bible as well as you do. So how did those coexist?
That objective capacity has gone out the window. Mm. The judgment center of the brain that normally would make that differentiation is now askewed. Mm-hmm. And again, the science on that's too detailed, but it just is askewed. So yeah, you could sit with me all day long. You would not win the argument on that one with me.
Well,
yeah.
For example,
because now I know. We, I just know.
Right.
Scientifically, right. We cannot fly. We don't have wings. We don't have that ability. But Dad admitted to me at one point he thought he could. Mm-hmm. So science, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Yeah, I could walk through crowds and people not see me. It was not a problem that I was going to meet with the president. I was outside the gates. I was there. I was that far. So all these things are taking place in the brain.
Yeah.
What stopped you, by the way, at the White House from going further?
Well, I had gotten in a hotel, Crystal City, across the river. I got the finest room because I had picked up a few suits on the way because all things were there for me.
My parents were poor, by the way.
So I had credit cards, which meant all the resources of heaven were mine. Mm. And so I was just pulling everything toward me, plane trips, et cetera, that I couldn't afford. But nobody was stopping the credit cards at that point in time. So I cross over, do a trip around the White House, and kind of like reconnaissance, and determined, not quite time yet. So I go back to the hotel. I call my wife. I knew she would be thrilled to hear from me. I'm out on this special mission journey to the world. Now, I'm in a covert op mode with this at that point. I mean, that's literally my mindset. There's certain things I'm not yet revealing. The big reveal is yet to come. I need to talk to President Carter first about some stuff. I'm in my hotel room, excited to call her. I left her back with my parents, pretty much clueless other than that she had been seeing stuff that was really bothering her. Where is he gone? Mm-hmm. And here he's calling from Washington, D.C. Why? She puts my dad on the phone, and he says, Tim, this is your dad. He says this three times. It was like an echo chamber effect. Now, I did not know that the absolute certainty of psychosis can be in that mental health state, be broken into with paranoia. Mm-hmm. Suddenly I went paranoid, and I knew somehow CIA, FBI, the Highway Patrol, every law enforcement agency now had my number. Mm. And I remember running to my rental car, hitting Highway 95, making my way to the Baltimore airport to get back to Tulsa. Now on the way, because I have this incredible spiritual capacity, I just calm myself and realized, you know, my family's got some problems here. Bless their hearts, because mm-hmm. there's a real high-mindedness that goes with this. I need to go back, calm them all down, then I'll get back on this tour of the universe. Mm. The only problem with that was when I got back, they had other ideas, and I ended up in a psychiatric ward. It's a little longer story than that, but long story short.
Long sure. story, yeah. And Mom, you know, Dad was saying you saw some little things here and there before he flies off that's making you go, this is not the man that I married. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people can relate to that. Mm-hmm. They're in marriage. So my brother, 5 years in, was born. And then I come along about a couple years after that. So you are at least now 8 years-ish into your marriage and all of this stuff. Is, but it's not just boom, he's on a plane. Some of the things that led up to this, I know that Dad shared, that you have shared with me, and you were like, this isn't the preacher boy I married. And what else could you share into that, if you don't mind?
Lack of sleep, lack of food.
Yes.
He lost his job because it was a severe winter that year in Springfield. So he was trying to provide for us. Me and these two little ones, and he was going door to door trying to sell things in the cold ice and snow, and was not getting anywhere. It just became a snowball effect that landed him in this episode, so to speak. So I did not know what I was seeing. All I know is that he went out and bought all these suits. He went out and bought a car I didn't know about. He was spending more, doing things that we would have never done or he would never have done because we always tried to agree mm-hmm. on things. And so he was just doing things that were not a part of what our normal life was. Yeah. So, yes, it was very unsettling at the time.
And so if you could go back, and this is not an easy request, but knowing what you know today, if somebody's experiencing, in fact, all the things that you just said are like, that's my life right now. Mm-hmm. if you could give yourself your best advice in your worst moment? Is there a way to?
Well, looking back now, I would say, you know, could he have had an aneurysm? Could he have had a brain tumor? Could he have had something like that that was physical? So it's important to get assessed physically as well as mentally and emotionally.
That's so very important to insert here. Anybody listening today, watching this today, they may hear in these symptoms, that's probably me, or that's probably my loved one. There could be other causes to the same symptom effects.
Right.
And you do want that medical assessment.
So that would be my first step now.
I'm curious about your faith journey during this. What did you think, even when you realized more that it was, even when you got to, okay, you're going to a psychiatric ward and you know that it's purely this, what was that relationship like between you and God at that time?
I hung on to him. I lived in the Psalms. And the first time around, the first episode, so to speak, he came out of the psych ward and I was thinking, yes, he's going to be my Tim again.
It was 5 weeks in the psych ward.
5 weeks there. And he came out no better than when he went in.
So all the same things.
So all, yeah.
The spending didn't stop or?
The medication that they put him on, he couldn't handle.
It was an erratic swing for over 2 years.
Over 2 years. It was like a roller coaster ride.
Highs, lows.
Yeah. And so my faith was everything to me. I mean, there were days that all I could say was Jesus, 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 Jesus. Just rock back and forth and just say the name of Jesus because I didn't know what else to do. We also had the situation where he was a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know who to go to because I did not want to uncover my husband. So I felt like I was by myself. And all I had was the Lord to hang on to during that time. Mm. When you don't know what's going on, it's like anybody that goes into the hospital and their loved one's in there and they don't know what's happening. They don't know what they're going to be diagnosed with. If there had been a diagnosis back then I could grab hold of that diagnosis and research it and find out what is this all about and get as much knowledge as I could. But there was no diagnosis that first time around. That didn't happen until, you know, 8 years later.
Science was just at the time beginning to decipher the bipolar concept in certain parts of the world and in the United States as well. But in Tulsa Town, where we were from, it was still being looked at symptomatically as a schizophrenic episode. They knew I wasn't schizophrenic, but in terms of delusions
and
the hallucinations, et cetera, they treated it that way. So I was put on high dosages of Haldol and Thorazine, which is off the charts volumes of medicine at that time, to crash me. And man, did it crash me into the depths of depression and despair.
I do want to, first I got two questions. One, because I want to go back to mom and just a moment. But dad, mom just said stressors. So is that what you find is triggering? So you always have probably struggled with this because this is a part of your chemical makeup, your DNA. But it's not really being manifested until like these stressors are triggering it. This is what we need to be watching for a loved one.
Increasingly, science says, yes, genetic-based.
Okay.
But there's environmental factors as well.
Yeah.
You could be living in certain environmental contexts where the stressors would never particularly trigger what was triggered for me.
And that must have been the first 25 or 30 years of your life then. Because at least I'm assuming you hadn't experienced anything like this before.
Looking back reflectively, I am aware of patterns back then.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Generally today it said late teens, early 20s is when it's seen. Mm-hmm. However, this can show up in early childhood. It can show up in the elderly period of life. So it can show up at any time. Mm-hmm. For me, it was age 29. But there's definite patterns I can look back and realize we just didn't know what we were looking at.
Mm. Yeah.
So schizophrenic episode, treated it the way they treated it, should have been kept on medications of some sort. But I was having incredible side effects with the medications. and kept complaining. The psychiatrist said, okay, to the family, we'll take him off for a little bit, but he'll be right back on or he'll be institutionalized again. Well, there was no good follow-up, and I was off of them. And once I leveled out after about 2.5-3 years, this finally calmed down, not knowing what it was, not knowing that it was chronic. And bipolar disorder is a lifetime persistent health challenge. Mm-hmm. It is chronic in nature, but we didn't know that.
Right.
So we assumed after the 3 years, this is in the rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when ministry opportunity was restored to us, mm-hmm. because for a number of years, our understanding was I would never be involved in ministry again. I would never be able to return to my academic pursuits again because of the nature of those stress factors.
Yeah.
But we did recover that ground. So when it happened again in 1988, it was a mind bender for, and you were present to that.
Yeah.
And that's when the diagnosis was more specific.
Yeah.
At the right point, though, I do want to come back to what was the worst feelings for me.
Absolutely. And when you were sharing about feeling like you didn't want to uncover Dad,
mm-hmm.
because as long as I can remember, that's been the word that they've used. As a husband and wife, you are a team. You don't talk outside of the marriage to other people and uncover him. It kind of along the line of what happened with Noah and his sons,
exactly.
you know, and they brought the blanket and they covered their dad's nakedness. That's what mm-hmm. you're supposed to do.
All about shame.
Would you give yourself or somebody right now presently that same advice by staying alone, quiet, not telling anybody? I know the resources today available are vastly different than they
were. Very different, yes. Very different. Today, no, I would not do that because there's so much available to people. And I feel that I could have benefited greatly from counseling, mm-hmm. from some therapy, because basically I was the therapist in our home. Everything went to me and through me. And for somebody to handle that on their own is not wise. Mm-hmm. Because we know now, after we've taught this for so many years, if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else.
Right.
So, no, I would not have done that way.
And in 1979...
However, I would have tried to keep it more private,
mm-hmm.
you know, and go to somebody that we didn't know, other than a church counselor or somebody like that, but an actual real licensed therapist that was...
Because sometimes the church members, the faculty, the leadership in the church, great intention, but they might not have the tools in the tool belt.
To
insert here, though, in 79, there was no such thing as a support group for people with this kind of disorder or for the caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
There were no counseling services in churches that began to understand this type of thing. We did go to a counseling service within a church, but they were coming from a normal pastoral care kind of philosophy with no knowledge about this kind of mental health challenge. The kind of support group organizations that exist today that have support groups by the thousands across our country were totally non-existent at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So as Nancy is saying, the resources today, including within the church, are unlike anything that existed back then.
Which is clear because with the second time he was hospitalized, Carter, I remember Mom being really frustrated because they were bringing fellow patients to Dad for counseling.
In the hospital while
because
I was in the hospital.
He was a pastor and he looked healthy.
Sure.
His skin was tan for some reason. I think it's because your hormones were all over the place. I don't know. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I play one on the air.
You went to a Holiday Inn Express last night.
That's right. Yeah. It's Holiday Inn. So, but I remember Mom being like, these people are being brought in. He's praying with them. And now there's this connection with these patients who are all really needing help.
And I was psychotic at that time.
And he's psychotic.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I guess that's fascinating and more into, and I want to get to a story too that Rochelle tells. I've never heard it from your perspective about somebody sitting with you in the dark from the church. But to your point, you clung to God.
Absolutely.
But what we see nowadays are people that even leave the faith because the church was so harmful. And I mean, insert the issue. It might not be mental health. It might be something else of even working on staff and you know, feeling undermined or whatever. But we see a lot of people giving up on the church because of harm done. And that would seem like a big harm if I was in your shoes. How did you work through, you know, the relationships with those people and specifically your own church body?
Well, to be honest, our senior pastor kept it very quiet. The congregation did not know what Tim was going through. For that, I'm grateful.
And he didn't put you in a position that would have hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes,
right.
That's important.
He gave us time off with pay.
Yes.
He wanted us to heal. And when we felt it was time to go back, you know, we went and sat with the pastor. And he looked at Tim and he said, I believe that you're ready to come back. But he said, the kids aren't used to seeing you with a beard. He said, you'll have to shave that off.
Oh, Carter, so, you would not have been in there.
I wouldn't have been. You wouldn't be there now.
Yeah, that's true.
Dad's got a beard now.
Now, in the first, that's the second episode of 1988.
Right.
In the initial episode, the ministry that we were involved with, they basically abandoned, not because they were cruel people, but because they did not know what to do with it.
They thought it was a demon.
There's a tendency to demonize or hyper-spiritualize. It must be a lack of faith. Other things you get prayed for, you get counseling, you're given a scripture verse, and you should finally get your game together and get going forward. The nature of this kind of an illness doesn't work that way. Healing recovery doesn't look the same as if you have an accident on a ski slope, go through rehab, and you're back up and running again. Healing recovery for us is a call to resiliency. It's never getting back up on the horse, finding the support that helps you to keep doing that. It's a different look, and not everybody's comfortable with that. So if your frame of reference theologically is that in praying for you, healing means fix it, cure is done, that's a problem for them and for me to know where do I fit because I don't ever seem to get cured. So a part of our message is healing is always healing, but it's not always a fix it, cure.
Well, what's the best way to come along with that? Of just some, I'm not even saying as a counselor or as a lead pastor or anything, just somebody that knows you, because I even think about a time where my friend was without a job. And we really prayed for that job. And he seemed okay. I think they were in a good enough place. He was not rushing to get a job. And like a year and a half goes by. And I'm sitting here going, do I continue to ask? Are we still praying? Are you okay? And he seemed to be, you know, fine and then relatively fine. And so it kind of reminds me of that, of how do I come alongside somebody in that long journey? What do you want to talk about it? Do I wait for you to come to me with a particular prayer request or issue? What's the best way to be a friend?
And I think that that needs to be answered by both of them.
Sure.
One is person who, this is what I would have appreciated, and as a woman who maybe even he didn't want to accept what you had to share, but you tenaciously kept going for it to encourage.
Well, let me go there by backing up to what does it feel like to be in my shoes. And that's millions of people that are in my shoes. Once we're past the euphoria and the flying high and doing all the Superman things that get you guys' attention and you say, we got to slow these folk down, we end up depressed. We end up depressed at the despairing of life level of depression. We end up suicidal, a great percentage of us. It's a cruel disease. Shame is what we want to avoid, but now it seems to be chasing us at every turn. Jesus was all about taking shame off of people. Your illustration with Noah and the sons wanting to remove shame from their father. Who wants to sign up for the diagnosis of mental illness? Who's standing in that line? Now, my heart goes out to anybody that gets a cancer diagnosis. I've had cancer. My wife is dealing with cancer right now. But people will show up at the bedside of somebody with cancer, salute their faith in Christ, cheering them on and halfway know what to do with the scenario. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you're mentally ill, they don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Or they show up with a fix it cure healing message or prayer approach. And if it doesn't take, somehow it's on you. Mm. It's on you. So a lot of people are not getting help today because they don't want to sign up for the humiliation of it, the shame of it, what they could experience as jeopardized in their life. They could lose a job over it, et cetera. Mm. But I want to squeak in here a word of hope to the audience. People with my particular mental health disorder, the stats say we're not going to survive 67 years of life. That's the average life expectancy for my folk. I will be celebrating in a couple of weeks my 73rd birthday.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
There is hope. There is healing, recovery, and resilience potential in Christ, and given the resources that are available to us today that once were not as available. There's greater insight among our spiritual leaders on these subjects than used to exist. Another word of hope. 90% of marriages where one partner has the disorder that I have end up in divorce. 90% plus, in fact, is the statistic. We're sitting here today having celebrated our 52nd. I'm already 50. I'm 53. 52nd. Now, is it work? For me, every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For her as a caregiver, every day. Mm. For any and all marriages, right? Every day. There's help. There's hope. There are resources. But I wave no magic wands. I pray no magic prayers. Coming alongside someone like you're talking about, we have got to learn how to validate their feelings. We're not real good at hearing to the point of listening for what they're feeling. There's so many cognitive, intellectual places we want to leap to get that all sorted out and fixed out. Front end, they need to feel felt.
What did you feel? You mentioned you wanted to share one of those worst moments with us. What did that
feel like? Great resistance initially. I'm not, why would I buy into this?
Yes.
But more and more as
heard the voice of God, your best friend.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, as I mentioned, for 3 years, I was in and out of that. And then there were times where I became very angry with God, and I just wouldn't listen anymore. Mm-hmm. How could you have betrayed my trust in you, who from my youth was determined to listen for your voice and obey that voice? And at every turn, to the best I knew, I had been doing that. And then when I moved on these things as understanding them to be your voice leading me this way, and then the rug gets pulled out from under me like this, mm. I'm on my face in shame in a psychiatric unit. You have got to be kidding.
So now I want to go over to Mom. You're dealing with the resistance. A lot of people, because I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud that you've done the hard work. I'm so proud when I see my mom, when my dad is kind of getting a little bit more in a place of, not mania, that's the wrong word, but when you're elevated.
Hypomanic.
Yeah. She'll reach over and she'll just do that. And that, I'm reaching over and just barely touching Carter. And it's subtle and nobody else will see it. I see it because I know her signals. But just to let him know, I'm seeing it in you. And so he can start breathing in and out. But he's receptive to it now. You have to humble yourself.
Years between us on that.
Because it can also be triggering. You get defensive. It's like, but I have things to say. And it's not about my disorder. You know, it's about I will have things to say. Yeah. So if they're resistant, what can you say to encourage? And also there are those families that maybe heard that you've been married that long and are saddened because their husband or their wife was resistant. Mm-hmm. And now they had to do, I mean, what they knew to do is they don't want to be with me anymore. It did lead to a divorce situation.
For me, my favorite word is life is choice. It was a choice for me to stay married to your dad. It was a choice for me to get as much knowledge as I could to try to understand what he was feeling. people with this disorder, they have symptoms. What we see are signs. When I see that there's a lot more talking going on, or he's getting revved up about something, he can't get off the dime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sign I see, and he doesn't necessarily see it.
Mm.
And so we talk about it.
I mean, let me insert to say, and if you hadn't learned to and become practiced in a willingness to say, what are you feeling?
What are you feeling? At
the, 'cause I'm feeling, why am I being held back? And once again, it's the bipolar is why people won't listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's, well, this is what I'm seeing. This is a sign. Every time I see it, it tends to move even farther and becomes, oh.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sharing the symptom, and she says, oh, that's what it feels like. When that conversation begins to happen, I listen to what she's seeing, what it sends as a signal back to her,
mm-hmm.
but she's hearing symptomatically what I feel in deep and dark depression. That conversation stirs compassion in both of us.
Mm-hmm. But these are things we've learned over these many years.
Sure.
You know, people look at us and say, how can I get to where you are? And I say, this is a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day it's a struggle. It's a choice every single day to stay connected, to have a relationship that's God-centered.
Mm-hmm.
It's a choice to surrender to your will sometimes and ask for the Lord's will. It is a choice, and it doesn't make me perfect. I am not perfect at this at all.
Pretty close.
At all. I'm no angel. I remember somebody saying, wow, you're such a strong pillar. You're so strong. And they just pat me on the back, and you start to get kind of bloated up about, you know, oh, I'm doing pretty good.
I'm the spiritual woman.
I'm the stabilizer in our family. And one morning as I was in the Psalms again, Psalm 75, it said, lift not up your aggressive horn.
Who do you think you are?
And I knew the Lord was talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is not you. This is me working through you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it has definitely been a God thing these many years, and I'm so grateful for his faithfulness.
And this triggers in me that at some point before we're done, I want to be able to give some resources for people. Where do people go? Because going it alone is not the way to go.
Go ahead and get to that now, because we got a couple minutes left, and I want to ask you about one story before we're done.
Oh, there, and I also kind of want to put this out there. Boundaries, super important.
Mm.
And finding out where those are and maybe going to these resources that dad and mom can share with you, because you're going to need them. Because my mom chose to stay. You may not be in a position for your own safety.
Correct.
Where you maybe should not stay.
Correct.
And so you have to, listen to her. But at the same time, it's like, oh, all of this means exactly the same thing. My story is going to align with theirs. It's not. It's your story.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So, okay, now I'm done. Daddy.
Yeah. Well, first, there's not enough time to start talking all the details of where resources are. So let me put this out there first. My website,
mm-hmm.
www.brighttomorrows.org. That's two T's, two R's, in Bright Tomorrows. There's a contact page there. You can email me. I am not a clinician. Our organization does not offer clinical services. We're an educational support organization. We can be helpful in terms of navigating, trying to figure out where do we go first.
Mm-hmm.
Your loved one needs assessment.
That's right.
Need to discover just what is this we're dealing with. What's the diagnosis? What's the treatment protocol?
Mm-hmm.
It's critical to have good support. There are good support programs out there today, educational support group programs out there. We have facilitated one for 23 years. So where are those? There are secular-based ones. There are faith-based ones. So that's important to know. Three three-digit numbers, everybody's aware of 911. And if you're facing in your home right now a mental health situation where you're afraid for their life, your life, and you don't know what else to do, start with 911. Get your loved one into an emergency room. If nowhere else, by federal law, they have to deal with that in some form or fashion. It's not a perfect system, but there's a resource. Another important resource in Texas and across the country now, 211, three-digit numbers, 211. This will put you in contact with varieties of resources. Let's say it's a lodging, food resource need, that kind of thing, navigating what's in our community for people, inclusive of assistance in how to navigate the mental health questions. 211. Finally, 988. This is brand new. Now, this has been a suicide confidential hotline nationwide for decades of time, but they've now shortened that number to 988, and they are refining the quality of service that it is nationwide. And there's, I think, 200 separate outlets for this service nationwide. You can go on there in a very confidential way with people that know what they're talking about. If you're concerned for a loved one and you as a caregiver just need somebody to talk to, or you yourself are dealing with suicidal thinking and you just would like to talk with somebody and you're afraid to even talk to your family about it, dial 988 24/7. Somebody will be there for you. But feel free to email me. I will respond to that email.
A couple of times after the show, actually, we've emailed, reached out to Dad with a person who's called our radio show who's in need, and we don't know where to begin to help. So that's helpful. Carter, what are you going to ask him?
She's told this story, and I thought it was so beautiful, and be curious your perspective in a nutshell.
Because
I think it's great. I think it's great for, you know, if somebody's listened to this podcast and said, you know, this is very fascinating, I don't have this struggle or know anybody that does immediately. But I think this is one that's important for what you're talking about, where people don't know what to do in a mental illness situation. I also think it's great in just being there for people in general, regardless of the situation, and not having to say anything. But it was a friend of yours that came over when you were sitting in the dark, and I think it was your home.
Yeah, that's right.
And he just came over and sat.
Doesn't sound like enough, does it?
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. Well, I'm the president of this organization called Bright Tomorrows. And that gentleman is now on my board because I was smart enough to ask him to please be on my board. Has been a friend for many years. But he didn't have a clue as to what to do with somebody that had a mental illness. He knew that he loved me and he cared about me as his friend. And I was at a place in the episodic nature of the bipolar disorder experience. Bipolar means you're experiencing something at both ends of spectrum, the upside, the downside. And I, for a protracted period of time, was in a deep, dark place. Didn't want curtains drawn, didn't want people particularly to come talk to me or anything like that. So he asked, Nancy came to the house, asked her, could I just sit with him? That's all he did. I still embarrass him on this every now and then because I'll bring it up illustratively. I was very aware of his presence in the room, and he never said a word. Healing presence. Healing presence. When Job's comforters got in trouble, it's when they talked too quickly. Now, it doesn't mean there's never time to talk and to nudge and to take people for help, as in the story with Jesus, the four men taking their friend to Jesus for help. But be quick to listen. Scripture says, be slow to speak and slow to get your emotions all stirred up. Be quiet for a while. And it requires you to tap into the peace of God yourself, to calm yourself, to be a non-agitated presence in the presence of the person you're wanting to help. You're wanting to calm down, but you're not calm. He did that. And he couldn't intellectually probably have told you then a three-step thing that he went through, but he tapped Jesus. He tapped peace in the middle of the storm, and it was present in that room. So people are out there saying, what can I do? If you have a family member and they're not on board with going for the help you're wishing they would, they're not following through with medications, treatment, and all these things, There are support groups for you to help you to learn how to begin to better take care of yourself, that you might be a healing presence in their midst. Because if you're an agitating, unhealthy presence, you're pouring kerosene onto whatever that matchstick flame might be today that can cause the house to get burned down.
I can think of no better way to end this podcast than what you just shared, which, yeah, it goes past anything having to do with mental illness. It's just how we can love our neighbor. That's how we're supposed to do it, to put self aside and to serve. And it's great to be educated and to try to figure out as much things as you can. But at the end of the day, Jay Hoffman did not have a doctorate. He didn't know, but the Holy Spirit knew what was needed. And to humble ourselves, what is God asking of me? And it might be that servant role. And I love that you're sharing that about finding a forum, maybe even online.
That's great.
I would just say that in our support group program, bunches of times during the year that we're meeting with these people, the single thing that ends up being most helpful to them, all the different data about mental illness that they learn from us, is how to calm themselves down, be healthier, to be a healing presence. They'll tell you that's their biggest takeaway when they finally catch on to what that means.
Well, thank you. Thank you, both of you. Thank you for being here. What a great special bonus episode of our podcast. And thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Carter. Thank you, Rochelle.